Hey everyone, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Healing the Parent Wound. I'm your host, Tracy Principe, and today I have a very special guest that I'm really excited about, Christina Martirosian, and she's a founder and director of the Pasadena Trauma Therapy. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, as well as a certified EMDR therapist in Pasadena, California. She works mostly with adult trauma survivors, complex PTSD, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, physical abuse, dissociation, which we're going to talk about today, incest, and cult survivors. Her main approach in working with trauma truly lies in doing parts work using the internal family systems, IFS lens. However, she also uses the following modalities in her practice: brain spotting, somatic therapy such as trauma resiliency model, sensory motor psychotherapy, and the havening technique. She also offers consultation to therapists and to clients for PTSD, complex trauma, and dissociative disorders. So her website is PasadenaTraumaTherapy.com, and she's also on Instagram at Pasadena Trauma Therapy. So be sure to check her out there. And as always, I will be having that information for you as well on this podcast and on my social media channel. So be sure to follow her on all the channels. So thank you so much, Christina. Welcome. So excited to have you today.
Thank you for having me. That was an introduction. Thank you so much.
Did I leave anything out? Awesome. Yeah. So I thought we could just really kind of dive into what dissociation is, what it isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a question I get a lot. We hear it, you know, the word out there, but what, you know, what does that really mean? How did we, you know, how and why do we dissociate? I think we can start there, and that should be some good meaty content there.
Plenty of info. Yes. Thank you for the question. Dissociation is on a spectrum, right? So we're all on there to some degree. The example that I tend to give to my clients is autopilot behavior. So when we are driving home and we know the route so well, maybe we're listening to music or we're talking on the phone, of course, on our Bluetooth, that we don't need to fully pay attention to the road. And you're like, how the heck did I get home so quickly? Right? That's autopilot behavior. And it's a very, very low form of dissociation, right? We all do that. Now, someone who's gone through more traumas in their life are going to be on other parts of that spectrum. The further you are on that spectrum, the last thing on there is what's called DID, dissociative identity disorder. Yeah. It's the ultimate form of dissociation. And so anyone who goes through trauma is going to be somewhere on that spectrum. And it shows up in many, many ways. You know, I have some people who say, I feel like I'm up above watching what happened to me down here. Right. Or they say, I don't feel like I'm in my body. I feel checked out. Right. Or they start talking about their traumas and can feel like all of a sudden that adult self is gone, and they're in a younger state when they're talking about their trauma. It really shows up differently based on what the trauma is and when it started, really.
So I remember as a child, I had moments where I remember feeling out of my body above, you know, as a child. And so this is really embarrassing, but my nickname in school was Spacey Tracy because I was kind of, to be honest, kind of spaced out, and the teacher would have to call my name a few times before I was like, oh, you know, And Thank you for sharing that.
So it can be, right? And I appreciate you sharing that. Therapists need to kind of rule out some other things that might be going on for the kid, right? I think ADHD is a very common thing that gets labeled on children that is assessed a little bit more when there could be a potential PTSD going on, there might be dissociation going on.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're describing is really common with dissociation, where there might be a kid who they look like they're there,
mm-hmm.
but they're not actually taking in any information that is being given to them. Mm. They can feel floaty. And when I hear a teacher say that there's chronic daydreaming, that's when I would kind of also question, you know, is this an ADHD thing or is this a survival response?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So it is on that spectrum. And you know, that makes a lot of sense. So what would, let's say you have, you know, the trauma history from childhood and, you know, you might have some adult trauma mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. right? That kind of continues and into adulthood. And what does that chronic dissociated kind of numbed state, you know, what kind of effects does that have on someone?
Yeah.
Over time, that accumulation.
So chronic dissociation can come in different forms, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always assessing, you know, when this started, right? So if it started, mm-hmm. if the trauma started younger, there's probably going to be more dissociation there. And if it continues, especially, right?
Yeah.
And we also want to look at the frequency of trauma. If it's a one-time mm-hmm. incident, versus a kid who's in a chronic traumatic household, right?
Right.
It's gonna make or break it there. So yeah. But chronic dissociation, mm-hmm. we're gonna see that leak in multiple areas of someone's life, depending on how they've learned to survive.
Yeah.
So Tracy, is it okay to maybe share some examples? I'm not gonna share an identifying
information,
but okay.
That'd be great. Yeah.
So one client who comes to my mind who has, who was sexually abused as a child,
mm-hmm.
She had parts of herself that just helped her move on through life by mm-hmm. being a workaholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when her stepfather died,
mm-hmm.
the perpetrator, that's when all of her memories started to come back to the surface, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like parts of her were saying, it's not safe yet until this person passes
that's right.
away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So for her, it showed up as, I'm going to keep pushing through. I'm going to keep working.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These parts of her would help her distract from the trauma until it was safe for her to finally look at this when her perpetrator passed away. So that's one example, right?
Okay.
And then I have folks on the further end of that spectrum, my DID mm-hmm. clients, where, and for everybody, for the listeners who don't know what that is, dissociative identity disorder is when a child grows up in chronic trauma, so physical, emotional, sexual, name it, right?
And
it's chronic.
Yeah.
That child needs to, their brain essentially fragments.
Mm.
In order to cope with their environment.
Right.
It's survival.
Absolutely.
So for someone like that, they have what's called, it's called an AMP, an apparently normal part that goes to school and appears functional.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But there are all these other parts of them that are trying to survive in dissociated states.
Yeah.
So it really depends, and I'm repeating myself, on the frequency and duration of that trauma and when it started.
Yeah. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between like that dissociative state and the, you know, like a numb freeze state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you definitely can't feel your body.
Right.
Right. Or even know what's happening, sensations or anything in your body, right? Because you're very far removed from that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you're asking the difference between numbness and like a complete free state. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. When somebody, you know, it's presents, they're just kind of, they're numb or they are in a free state, right? Mm-hmm. And there's usually dissociation with that, mm-hmm. but it can get kind of murky, at least for me, when I'm working somatically with somebody, right? Because they can't even notice sensations or what they're feeling because they're not in their body. It can actually be too much to go into their body.
That's right.
Yeah. So we don't even want to go into that because that they're out there for a reason.
I think you bring up a really good point. Yeah. Some clients, when you're trying to do that somatic work, it needs to be really slow because if they've been out of their bodies for survival purposes, to start to tap into those sensations could be actually dysregulating.
For
some clients. So there's a concept called slower is faster.
Yeah.
Right. When it comes to trauma work, slower is faster. And it's really giving the clients tools to be able to even go there. So with my clients who are numbed like that, I will first work on what's called external resources.
Yeah.
So tactile, like name me five things you can feel, smell, touch.
Yeah.
Right, external, because internal might be a little too overwhelming initially.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've definitely seen what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's interesting because of that state of dissociation and being so far removed from the body. Finding external resources, we do that in somatic work, right? Can kind of, and then we slowly work to the body. But that's always so fascinating to me, that survival response and why it's there, right?
I would call it the ultimate form of protection.
Yeah, the ultimate, right? So the other survival responses, you know, you couldn't fight back, you couldn't run away. So dissociation is like the last resort,
right?
Is that right?
Yeah. So there's fight, and I'm happy to, if you want me to explain these, fight, freeze, fawn, and fiend death, which is not talked about very much, but
that's right.
Fight is where there's a way to try to escape. Right. And speaking of somatic work, we'll see this in our clients, right? If we're talking about the trauma, a fight response may show up if like someone's fist gets tightened, right? Or their jaw starts clenching. These are fight responses. Flight is when we feel like we can run away from the scene. And we can also see that in somatic work. If like someone starts pulling away, right, or their legs start shaking, right? These are all signs of a flight response showing up in the body, which is so good to work with when a client can show that to us. Fawning is essentially a defense mechanism that the goal of it is to keep the peace. So maybe a kid who, you know, grew up in a DV household, and they go entertain dad, you know, so that he doesn't get angry and beat up mom, right? So it's like a keeping the peace type of a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Freeze is literally when we can't move.
Yeah.
But the fact about freeze is our eyes and our respiration are still intact in freeze.
Yeah.
And fiend death is the one that's not talked about too much, is where all of those things just do not work. And so fiend death is a whole shutdown. Mm-hmm. This is how dissociative disorders come in place, right? There's memory gap and amnesia.
Yeah.
So those are the different defense mechanisms that can show up.
Right. Okay. So earlier you said, you know, like working too much or an addiction like alcoholism.
Yeah.
Is that dissociative? Is that a way to dissociate or?
It can be a way to definitely dissociate. Anything in extremity is the ultimate form of protection, right? So looking at it from like a parts perspective, I would look at any form of, you know, extreme compulsivity or addiction as a way to protect from maybe painful pain, hurt, trauma. Right. And so someone who's an addiction, it can be a form of dissociating from the trauma.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, one thing I've noticed in the work that I do is there's a lot of shame around dissociation. Cause again, people sometimes aren't even aware that they are dissociating. Because it's they've been in that state for so long, it's just like the way it is, right? And so, you know, I'm sure you are the same. I'm very cautious when I bring dissociation up to clients and point it out to them, because I see the shame that it creates in them, right? So there's that tricky balance of bringing it to their awareness, but not inducing the shame, right? Can you talk a little bit about why there's so much shame and what maybe offer some tips around, you know, it's normal, it's okay, you're okay, there's nothing wrong with you?
Yeah, of course. It's such an important question. I too see that quite often where there is shame responses to freezing up or not fighting back or running away in some kind, right? Yeah. Like fight, flight, freeze. And typically my response to my clients is like, thank goodness for that dissociation, right? That dissociation helped you survive. A client of mine actually comes up who she's a, sexual assault survivor. Mm-hmm. And part of the narrative was, why didn't I push him off? Mm. Why didn't I run away? And this was a very violent dude. And I said to her, I said, thank goodness for your dissociation, because if you tried to have fought back, this person who was already violent could have intensified that violence. Right? And so
I
think the big question is how has dissociation helped you survive?
Yeah, what a great question. How has dissociation helped you survive?
Yeah,
that's great. That's a great question. Yeah, because that's exactly why it's there.
And for the parts carrying shame, you know, I would want to also explore that. And how is the shame helping you survive? I see so many survivors who, actually the same client I just mentioned, who blamed herself for the assault. And when we asked the question of, you know, how has that shame helped you survive? She said, she's a very smart lady, intuitive woman who was saying, well, the shame helps me remember that this was really bad. And it also gave her a false sense of control, as if she can control someone who is twice her size and extremely violent.
Right. Yeah. Right?
So there are protective aspects to shame. We just need to figure out how it's helping the client survive these things.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That makes so much sense. Yeah. The kind of sense of control in that. So fascinating. Yeah.
All the protective parts of the self.
All the, yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. What about, you know, when when you're working that with that level of dissociation, you know, and again, kind of doing the external orienting and, mm-hmm. and grounding. Sometimes what I do is have somebody kind of like squeeze their arms or part of their body to see if that's helpful, if they can notice, you know, squeezing themselves. And again, if they can tolerate it, right, if it's not too mm-hmm. uncomfortable, to kind of bring them back into their body. When they notice that they might be kind of dissociating or checked out, right, so that they can kind of bring themselves back in some way. Yeah. Do you find that the tools like that helpful for people?
I do. And I love that example because it's literally you're encouraging them to reconnect, right, with their yeah. with their limbs. Similarly, if someone is kind of checked out, I might mm-hmm. ask them if they can slowly get up and actually push against a wall.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good way to also bring one. Someone back and like really push with their arms and play mm-hmm. with even their foot position can help.
Yes.
And then also pressing against their palms.
Yeah.
Or against the pillow has been a way to bring some people back as well.
Yeah. Those are so good. Yeah, I do those too. Those are really helpful. And again, just kind of seeing what resonates for a client in terms of, you know, I might even do like the space that they're in, if they could, you know, feel themselves in their room and how much space they're taking up in that room. You know, and then they might say, well, I feel like I'm taking up 30%, and you know, and get them to really notice like how much space am I taking up in this room that I'm in. And that stuff really it really works.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like the percentage piece to that.
Yeah, I do a lot of percentages. It works really well.
Yeah.
And those, you know, those kinds of tools are really helpful. Again, depending how dissociated they are and if they can tolerate, you know, some of the body stuff, right?
So the body stuff too. And then for external, I really love to help my clients make what I call like a bag of safety. That sounds kind of funny, but it includes something of the five senses in there. You know, okay. I have therapy putty and stress balls in my office, but why not help them make their own little backpack or bag of safety where they include something of the five senses that's meaningful for them, right?
I love that.
And it's playful too. So I think to younger parts of my clients, a woman I have, visiting her parents is a very triggering experience. Mm. And so what we've done is, helped make a, backpack of safety. And in there she has, you know, lavender lotion for touch, but also soothing smell. She has, music for sound that is very comforting to her, and then a little candy that is very flavor wise very pleasing. And so when she gets out of her window of tolerance, she will take a break, go use her little backpack of safety, ground herself, and then go back to, you know, whatever the family gathering was. But it's been a really good way to just like ground herself.
Yeah.
With her little.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's so great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, as we work with, you know, that somatic experience and the nervous system and kind of coming back into the body, and people, I find it a really organic process, right? It kind of just, whenever the nervous system and those parts are ready, to come, you know, to come back into some window of tolerance. There's kind of like, less dissociation and more body awareness, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a slow process. I find that it can be slow coming out of, because again, it's such a level, that state of dissociation to me is so far removed. It takes a while, right? So can you maybe further expand on, you know, just helping, if you have any helpful tools or thoughts around the time that it takes to come out of the state, because some people are like, wow, am I, you know, how long is this, you know, am I always going to be like this, or is this ever going to get better? You know, it can get kind of discouraging at times.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the more dissociation there is, right, if it's like a DID client, for example, that tends to be longer term therapy. Yeah. If it's dissociation from, and I'm not saying this in a way to minimize anyone's experience, but like a one-time event, for example, that's, and there's no prior trauma, right? Then working with that dissociation is going to be quicker versus someone who maybe has been in this in a chronic way. And depending on many things, right? If they've had therapy beforehand, if they've had a good support system, people who believe the survivor. That's such a huge piece.
Huge. Yeah. Yes. So that's a really good point. And, you know, most of my audience and my listeners, because I deal with a lot of them are maybe very strained with their parents. There might be no contact with their parents. Sure. For exactly those reasons, they were not believed, and that perpetrator is still in the house. And even though they're adult children now, you know, that family dynamic is still in place, and they've had to remove themselves from that. So there isn't any support. And even whole family, you know, the entire family of origin, siblings, aunts, uncles, you know, they're often just this one lone person who has this, you know, truth, and that the entire family system doesn't want to hear, right?
That's right. I mean, no wonder they had dissociation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is just, I mean, that is hard. That is so, so hard.
Yeah.
Literally losing, oftentimes they just lose their entire family.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's such a hard thing to do, but those are the truth tellers, right? Those scapegoats are the truth tellers.
Right.
Yeah,
they are. They really are. So when there isn't that support, it can be so beneficial to have that therapeutic container and relationship with a therapist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That can kind of walk you through the dissociation. And then the other things, I don't know, you probably notice this too, but when my clients start getting in their body and they start listening, and, you know, a whole other, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I, you know. you start waking up that body, and that's how I know that they're really, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm really angry, and you know, all of these things start happening, right? So then we're like going through a whole other layer, and you know, because they've made contact.
That's right.
With that, you know, with that, with your body, and you know, they start setting healthy boundaries, or, you know, just all kinds of things start happening, which is always, you know, just so amazing. And, you know, when that starts to happen, right?
Absolutely.
So if you could talk a little bit more about what that is like when you do come out of dissociation, and what, you know, what that might be like, what that could look like.
I love the example you gave, actually, Tracy, because I think that, so I work very much from a parts perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with, like, parts work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I am.
So this dissociation are parts of the client that are trying to help protect them from maybe feeling in their body, but also feelings that they've had to carry. Right. Yeah. And so when the client sees that that dissociation part doesn't have to work so hard anymore, it does bring up, like you said, anger. And now I have to set boundaries and betrayal and abandonment, all those feelings that were being, you know, shielded essentially from the dissociation. Now they're coming up to the surface.
That's right.
Including the body sensations.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a great sign when that part can take a little step back and not work so hard and then make space for these truth-telling parts, like we just mentioned, right?
Yeah,
right. Who can speak their truth.
Yeah. Right?
But that journey is so subjective and depending on, like we mentioned, like the client's resources, like their support system, where they believed, you know, there's so many factors to how long this therapy is going to be.
Right.
But hopefully with the right support, and it seems like you do amazing work, the somatic work that you do and parts work, that they can move through and create more healthy balance.
Absolutely. And I really, you know, I the somatic work and I do a little bit of parts work from a somatic, you know, where do you feel that part in your body? And I love them both because I find them both very gentle and very body-based, you know, and just really, really gentle. So, and oftentimes I have people do the somatic work and then go on to EMDR. Because I find when they have some regulation, they will, they'll do better with the EMDR.
Right. That, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
I look at it as like different trauma stages. Right.
And absolutely.
Stage one is so focused on giving our clients the skills to be able to regulate their nervous system. So that when they go into stage two trauma processing, like EMDR, right?
Yeah.
They have the tools to be able to go there, or else it could be extremely dysregulating. Just jumping.
Absolutely. Yes. And I know that some clients have had that experience with EMDR where they dissociated more. It was very dysregulating. But then after the somatic work, they've gone back and had a much better experience. And again, everybody's really different with that too.
Right.
So it's such a, it's like everybody is so, so different. This has been such a great conversation. Anything else that you feel like you want to add or that we've missed touching on?
What I want to add is I think that there is so much hope when it comes to working with survivors. It is, at least for me, it's an honor to work with my clients. And I know there's sometimes when people come in, they feel a little bit hopeless about their levels of dissociation. Yeah. But I think that with the right type of care, like people can really come out of this and really heal and have a fulfilling life. So I just want to instill hope. If there are listeners who do struggle with dissociation, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, so I hope that if anyone needs any resources, like I would be happy to help, even if they're in a different state, you know, help find resources. For clients who, are seeking therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the hope is so, you know, is just so great, especially with some of the somatic tools, you know, that are, again, just the easy orienting and coming, you know, if you can squeeze your arms or, you know, squeeze your hands together, right, or push the wall out. Even doing that and again, noticing, like, it's not so much, yes, I'm doing this, but then what do you notice when you do that? Right. Or do you notice anything different? And, And, you know, when I press the wall, what do I notice, right? And that just those little exercises and asking those questions can bring you out of that dissociation. I have, you know, on the first session, I'll have somebody do those things and they will, you know, they feel something. Yeah, I feel the wall. And when I do that, I feel, you know, I feel this stretch right here, or I feel, you know, whatever it is, right? So, and that to me is the hope, because they're like, yes, I had that experience in that moment.
Yes.
Now you might dissociate again later.
Yes.
But
you have the tools.
But yeah. You have a tool. Practice. Yeah. And you notice something, which to me is hope, right? To be able to do that. And that's why I just love somatic work so much.
Right.
And finding that hope, if we could just have that little hope and they can notice something, right, that could, you know,
make a shift,
and have a tool and make that shift.
Yeah.
And then you have a tool that you didn't have.
That's right.
You know, because exactly. Most people are out there suffering, you know, dissociated, or they have anxiety or depression and they don't have the proper tools.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great. And I love that you use these skills.
Yeah, it's been life-changing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
That stumbled upon this, yeah. You know, kind of stumbled upon this work, and I was like, wow,
nobody, it really works.
Yeah, nobody ever mentioned the nervous system, or yeah. You know, like, right? And I was just like, wow. So that's why I really love, you know, I really love getting this information out there. And so happy to have an expert like yourself to come in and talk about it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you making space for the topic as well.
Yeah.
You know,
underutilized topic, or, you know, if the word is out there, it's like, what is it really? It's thrown around a lot. So this is a great conversation. I think my listeners will find this really, really helpful. So I think with that, we'll end.
Sure.
And,
thank you so much.
Yeah. And thank you again, for being here, and, awesome. Yeah. Thanks again. We're going to end the podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next time.